you can visualize it like that and see the lines of coordination, you can very readily grasp the scene. Yeah.
I thought it was sort of a dull thing when Bill Smead first told me to do it. But then as I got into it, I began to see what the problem was. That nobody knew what was really the ruling document and which ones were co-equal and so forth. Oh, here's a chart on incentive contracting. See, we're converting to incentive contracts. You mentioned that. And here we got Ed King. He's a staff member. And he's following us on all the stages. By the way, that didn't come to happen on all the stages. Here's a thing on the liability. I mean, all the stages. See, I know I'm not covering everything I should cover. But, this is qualification of all the components, stage by stage and total. And total after Rudolph. Now this is something. Each project manager had to get up and tell about all the components. You see, there were, I think the publicized figure was there were 6 million parts in the Saturn V vehicle. And these things all had to be so-called qualified. That is, they had to undergo certain tests and meet these specifications, all these conditions. And once they had done that, then the component was qualified for flight. And they had a little certificate. They signed this thing off. Just think about that for a minute.
That's a lot of parts.
That's a lot of parts. And then you got the additional problem of deciding whether to qualify the resistors in a small electrical relay system, or do you just certify the relay system itself? Because many times, the resistor or transistor of some sort would be a failure point, or a little bitty printed circuit board inside this little black box would be a failure point. Something would happen, the thing would short circuit during operation. Do you go down and qualify the printed circuit boards, or do you qualify the whole black box? Well, that all had to be worked out. At any rate, it was. And Dr. Rudolph had a chart here in this room which showed him the total summation of how component qualification was coming. Because he not only had to track the big stage, he had to track all the little bitty parts. Well, he didn't want to get bogged down in detail. So this is really a summarization. The number of components that had to be qualified, the number that were at that given time, and then they had a lot of other data underneath here in digital form. Then they had the total vehicle. It's like a typical business chart. Right here you see that.
Okay, this is for the total vehicle and this is by stage.
By stage.
And one for the IU and one for the subsystem.
See, of GSE.
Yeah.
GSE was a horse of a different color because it was a bunch of piece parts almost. And they had a lot of trouble with GSE on the Pershing program. So Dr. Rudolph put a lot of effort on that thing. Mm-hmm. He had had problems before on that. Here's a chart on reviews, assessments, and certification. And following nothing but that. All the stages. Of all the vehicles, 501, 502, 503.
I'm just curious, why was all this considered so confidential? Was it because of the, was it considered national security or in terms of contractual relationship with the contractor?
Well, I didn't know it was considered so confidential.
Yeah, I just noticed on the back of one of these things.
Those words, confidential. Well, I can explain that. All launch dates were by decree of NASA headquarters confidential. That's the only thing that was confidential. Mm. So every chart that showed a launch date had to be classified.
Why was that, do you think?
I'm not quite sure, unless it was just a holdover from the Department of Defense missile launching days.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been a thing by NASA headquarters just to keep the launch dates away from the public so that people weren't, you know, if we had a slippage, we weren't under the gun, so to speak. Mm-hmm. They could change the dates without anybody getting all on their backs about it. I don't know. But eventually, the launch date, that's the only thing I know of, the launch date. There was another thing, I think, but we didn't, something about engine specifications. There was some engine technical data, which was confidential, which may have been because they were considering using the engines on some DOD project or something. Okay, I'm not too familiar with that. But I do remember that the engines had some kind of a technical classification problem, and we had this launch date problem.
Well, I suppose you get in the same thing in certain aspects of construction. DOD was going to use a certain type of construction, something like that. That could be a mm-hmm. confidential or classified kind of
problem. Here's a good old S2 stage.
Yeah.
They had their problems. They switched from one kind of material to another in midstream, different thicknesses, and they had to go to different welding techniques. They had a common bulkhead, which was 33 feet in diameter. Now, a common bulkhead had been built before on the S4B stage,
yeah,
but not a 33-foot diameter job. And, boy, they had their problems. You can just see this chart right here. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 arrows indicating major problem areas on that given date. 10th of March, 66. And all mm-hmm. kinds of slippages. See all these anticipated slippages? Every time you see a diamond that goes out like that from someplace back here where there's a little triangle, indicates an estimated slippage.
One massive slippage.
Things look like bad, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you have to find out why this was slipping. And this is where you go into these backup charts and all.
Okay, and these red arrows for problems have numbers on them.
Yeah, those were related to these written problem sheets.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Boy, they're even slipping on the transporter. Yeah, transporters were slipping, of course everything. Seems to me it almost gets to be a real problem, because if you're building a transporter, for example, and the word comes down that the stage itself is slipping, you're inclined to say, okay, there's no big rush on this thing, let's cool it. You know,
that's right. Easy.
So that the result was that they begin to slip.
We're trying to locate a cartoon which shows each stage as a racehorse. And got a finish line up here held by the Paul Program Manager headquarters. He's moving the finish line back and forth.
Is that the one that Sid was telling me about?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And
that's why I was...
And Rudolph was on an operating table?
Well, I thought he was, but I found out that's a different cartoon.
Yeah.
I thought that was on the same cartoon, but apparently that was a different one. But that was one of the tricks, is to get all these stages, like your biscuits and your jelly, to come out even.
Yeah.
You had to put your team, your time and attention to the item that required it. These Tiger teams, you know, and they established a Tiger team. The S2 got so bad off that they just got a whole mass of people, including the project manager and a whole bunch of experts, and just went out and jumped on North American Rockwell's doorstep and says, here we are, fellas, we're going to help you. There's any way we can help you, and we better be helping you quick, because you guys are holding up the show.
Yeah.
And this Tiger team, I'm sure you...
Is that when they got started with S2? They really weren't... Or were there other periods of time?
That's the first time I recall a Tiger team. In fact, it was the big Tiger team ever.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that still gets me is, you know, why this thing is so much different from other control rooms. I just want to kind of recap that if I can. One of the things is, as far as the charts are concerned, the people are on. That makes a big difference.
Right.
And but that's backed up, too, by the matrix management matrices.
That's right.
Yeah. And the other thing that strikes me, and I think it reflects managerial intent of the Saturn V program offices. You've got charts, you say, for hardware, the project managers. But it's very significant. You've got a separate set of charts for the functional managers.
Mm-hmm.
And they were writing, you know, just as many problems and had just as much importance as anybody else. I think that stands out. And as I understand it, too, that was unique kind of with the Saturn V program office.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the functional managers had as much muscle as anybody else in the organization.
Yeah, I've never seen it, really carried it to that degree before. Nor has it been to that degree since.
Would it have been necessary in some place else, like for instance, the engine program office?
No, because they had a single operating unit, I think. The engine
didn't require all this integration business,
you see. That's one reason that I don't believe that the Saturn management approach is transferable, simply saying, okay, use that system on this project here. See, because what we had, and I'm going to pump this handle one more time, was a number of major hardware units being built at a number of locations throughout the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
And all this had to be brought together to perform a given function, that is, a launch,
mm-hmm.
on a given date. And they had to succeed technically, and they had to not exceed their budget. It all had to be coordinated. And I don't know of any other project except going to the moon that's ever really required quite an effort like this. Usually, I mean, even building a B-17 in World War II, I wasn't there, but I had a feeling that Boeing could almost do that thing up in Seattle. And they would just buy parts. I think that was a different concept. You would just buy parts and bring them in. The biggest deal might be buying an engine from somebody like Pratt & Whitney or the like. But never anything for each unit in itself was so important.
The only other area where that would have been required is in the Saturn 1-1B office. But there, you're dealing with only two stages.
Yeah.
And it's not...
And two out of the three were developed in-house.
In-house, yeah. Yeah.
So, they really went out on the S-4B as it was a case unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
So we will buy this stage. So they didn't need all this. They just really had one big stage coming from one place.
Mm-hmm. And even though Chrysler wound up with the contract, that technology for building the basic S1, S1, these first stages had been pretty well settled.
Yeah, the whole thing was designed, tested, and they were flown.
Yeah, the tankages were taken out of other Redstone and Jupiter programs. So there really weren't the... multitude of problems that you had with the Saturn V.
I believe we built 15 S1 and S1B stages here at Huntsville. I can't swear to that, but I believe all the S1 stages were built here.
Yeah.
And I believe the first five S1B stages.
I thought they shifted that down to Michoud, though.
Well, maybe the last three S1s were built at Michoud.
Chrysler took it over.
Maybe you're right.
Yeah. Chrysler built the last two of the S1 stages.
Was that what it was?
And I was under the, I don't really know for sure, was under the impression they had all the S1B stages since they did it.
Oh, did they? Well, maybe you're right.
Okay. I'm not really positive about that myself. But in any case, the point is, you say the basic design work and stuff, those two stages for the Saturn 1-1B, the first stages are basically similar.
Right.
The only thing different was the upper stage. But even on the shuttle or the Skylab, you don't have the staff functions having the similar muscle that they did in the Saturn V program necessarily. Is that a aspect of managerial preference, or just is the logic of the program account?
Well, I think number one, you hit it, is a managerial preference. However, I think that in certain programs, the manager's preference would be outweighed by the necessity of doing it that way.